Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Topher, Principal Architect of Topher Architecture, and you're listening to New Books Architecture, a podcast channel on the New Books Network dedicated to architecture and its publications. If you have any suggestions on authors who you'd love to hear me speak with next, feel free to send me an email at btopher@topherarchitecture.com. Today's guest is Dr. Fleur Watson to talk about her book, The New Curator, Exhibiting Architecture and Design. Dr. Fleur Watson is Executive Director and Chief Curator for the Center for Architecture Victoria and Open House Melbourne. Dr. Fleur Watson was also curator at Design Hub Gallery in Melbourne. Thank you very much for being here with me today and welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Brian. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure's all mine. Now, before we begin, can you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself?
Sure, absolutely. Well, Brian, I'm a curator, and I've been working in curatorial practice with really a specific focus on architecture and design, although I have also worked across the visual arts for about the past 20 years almost. But really my background is that I studied as a designer. I grew up in Western Australia here in Australia, so in Perth, one of the most remote cities in the world, but an extraordinary place. I did my undergraduate design degree there and then went on to postgraduate, a master's degree with the Design Museum in London and Kingston University, and recently a PhD in architecture and urban design through their practice-based stream. So my kind of background is very much like, I think, a lot of the curators who are in the book, actually. I've kind of worked mainly early on as a practicing designer, but then very quickly really moved into what you might call a specialised field of journalism. So I was the editor of an architecture magazine here called Monument for about 7 years, and that really kind of honed my interest in cultural practice, writing, discourse, certainly the beginnings of exhibiting around the practice of architecture and design. So that was a really fundamental period of work that really shifted my attention into this more cultural production around architecture and design.
Very interesting. And so, diving right in, usually my first question is kind of a little deeper in the book, and so I apologize for that. But I think what I'd love to start with is this idea of the new curator, and I know that's right on the cover, but it's a theme throughout the entire book, and each chapter does talk about the curator as a specialist. But I guess could you maybe start us off with this idea of the new curator?
Well, I think it is a great place to start. This idea of the new curator is in itself a little bit provocative. And the reason for that is really that it's not about setting up a binary. I'm not interested in setting up a binary between new and old forms of curatorship. The scholarship and custodianship that is in established modes of curation and cultural production is very important. But that provocation really comes in response to this idea of perhaps an emerging form of curatorial practice, which I think you can see through all of the conversations and the chapters of the book. And I argue in the book that this emerging sense of what a curatorial practice is in relationship to architecture and design is very much responding to not only the way that the practice of architecture and design is rapidly changing and expanding, but also the complexity and the diversity of conditions in which we're all responding in terms of contemporary life. So it's really about that porosity. And I think that's really important because, you know, it's really important that all these forms of curation come together. But in the context of the new curator, I'm really talking about this idea of encountering design, perhaps rather than a more traditional mode of practice where you might encounter a series of objects where the curator is actually placing those either within a continuum or revealing certain stories around them. I'm really interested in this idea of how you might actually exhibit design ideas and process as distinct from finished works or artifacts. So that idea that you're kind of in real time in terms of some of these issues that we're grappling with. And in that way, we're kind of tuned to the relationship to the outside world, the cultural and the social context, as well as those kind of debates that are happening within practice itself. So that's the context.
But it's a very interesting idea. You know, as a professor of architecture myself, you know, every project at the end is basically a student showing us their finished work, and then we do present it in the hall for everyone to see. But the reality is it's a set of drawings and models of kind of their final design. So the idea of presenting process and interim stuff is, it seems kind of obvious, but it's pretty interesting to hear about. So the question I have is, and again, with pretending I didn't read the interviews, how do people react to seeing much more process, more abstract versions of design versus a finished kind of contemplatable model?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think it is always quite a challenging environment to achieve. But I would argue that all of the conversations and the projects in this book are really talking about the fact that curating is not an activity that takes place in isolation, and the audience is a key part of these types of projects. So it's really about, rather than presenting to an audience, it's actually bringing them right into the middle of the process. You know, obviously there's a balance because it's really important to make it a welcoming environment. And that's something that I think all of the curators in the book are really aware of and, again, grappling with. You know, there's a sense of how you bring people inside the process, but also making sure that they feel welcome and that it's an open and comfortable environment in which they can either take a very active part or perhaps they're just gently kind of working their way through it. So it's definitely this idea of the exhibition space as a laboratory for the production of knowledge, research, experimentation of ideas, taking risks. This word risk is really important because I think, you know, on one level, a lot of the exhibitions that we're presented with as a community, because of their high cost and the kind of pressures within museum culture in general, often don't have a lot of risk in them because that's quite a kind of challenging concept. But that's where I think it's really important that we do have a variety of spaces, whether they're kind of independent spaces, whether they're spaces aligned to universities or colleges or research institutes, or whether they are, in fact, within the more established institutions themselves, where that kind of more risky, open production can take place. And I guess to answer your question, is it really varies in my experience? I mean, certainly many of the projects within the book some of which are at Design Hub Gallery, which I curated with my colleagues, were quite risky in terms of how that public audience would engage with either the process-based works or the debates or discussions around them. But I think that's where the what I would call the kind of curatorial hand is really important. So even though that curator is perhaps not as front and present in terms of a didactic curatorial voice, there is this element of what I call in the book at times, not always, but a kind of dramaturg approach, the kind of setting of conditions for things to happen within the environment or experiences to be unfolded or tests to be tested. But there is thought in which in the way that all of those things are connected together that are coherent. And I would say lastly, it was a very long answer, sorry, but lastly, there is a certain agency in this too, or a certain mission, I guess, from my perspective, and that is how do we move people, our community, from thinking about design as a singular hero piece of architecture, for example, to something that is much more crucial to the way that we think about how we come together as a community, because architectural thinking and design thinking in general clearly has a really important place and a really important leadership role within how we think about our built environment and our natural environment and how we face those kind of challenges that we all face as a community. So there is a kind of agency in trying to communicate and mediate to a wide public audience that design is something that can contribute to all parts of our lives, not just that kind of celebration of a beautiful object or a piece of architecture.
Thank you very much for elaborating on that. There's a few parts of your answer actually kind of bring me to a specific one of these chapters. You had mentioned the idea of, you know, experiencing design versus looking at the finished product, the idea of experimenting and having kind of more of the community engage and involve. And so one of the first chapters that come to mind is, and I don't know which specific one, the chapter about, you know, going from hybrid to digital, you know, architecture, it's no secret, is trying to embrace much more three-dimensional virtual reality technology. And one thing I will say for everyone listening, that there's quite a bit of illustrations and images that you're just not going to see listening to the two of us talk. So, but, you know, that chapter specifically shows a lot of pictures of digital environments and people actually using, you know, virtual reality goggles to experience it. And so, sorry for this long question. The question I have is, in that interview, it is discussed that a lot of people do experience virtual environments much more than they think in the terms of video game design. And so, as your experience as a curator, do you see a lot of people physically interacting with, you know, any of the, when there's virtual reality goggles, for example, do people put them on and truly experience, or is it more of a novel?
Well, I think at the moment, you know, we've obviously had this distinct and very quick responsive change in how we engage digitally. So I think certainly I've seen, even in my own work with the Centre for Architecture and Open House Melbourne, this kind of digital space really opening up. So I guess if we look at it from two perspectives, from a really kind of simple perspective, we've seen museums talk about digital production and exhibitions being kind of more accessible to everyone for a long time now, and it's been absolutely rapidly transformed through the experience of the pandemic. So that access to exhibitions through, you know, VR tours that don't require necessarily goggles is very prevalent. And that has really raised some interesting issues for us in terms of and relates to one of my points before, in terms of how do we start to think about, let's call them radically welcoming spaces, which is not my term. It's actually an academic called Sayan Devi, but it's a really great idea. I love it because it is that thing of saying, well, sure, we talk about access and inclusion and we try to think about that all the time with how people come to something like open house or an exhibition environment. But actually, if we're working in this hybrid world, what do we actually mean by things being accessible and inclusive, and how are they welcoming for everyone? So that's kind of one side of it. But in the chapter, what you're referring to is really a lot of the work of Space Popular. And there's other people that we profile and speak about, or I profile and speak about in the book, but also through the conversations. And I think that's a really interesting area. And I think Space Popular are one of the practitioners really working in this. And you can see through the book a couple of really tangible examples, a project they did for the Tallinn Biennale called the Venn Room, and then another one that they did with ArcDes. And that's really talking about, okay, if our very near future is going to be embedded with the experience of space through augmented reality, then what do we want those spaces to be? And what are the kind of ethics and kind of social values of those spaces? And I think that work is incredibly interesting because we're starting to think about where spaces overlap, where things like aesthetics come to the fore. You know, really this kind of shift in terms of how we experience our cities and our regional centres through augmented reality. So that's just kind of one of the chapters that really starts to grapple again with that. We know this is happening. We're already seeing things like virtual tours of spaces, architecture, exhibitions everywhere. But when we get to that next, place, which is already happening, where designers are designing with intent virtual spaces for us to be part of through augmented reality, how do we as a public take an active role within that, and how are designers thinking about that from their kind of not only designerly responsibilities but their kind of social responsibilities? So that to me is really interesting territory.
Thank you. And it's, you bring up the idea of active participation, and so again, a lot. Every chapter has very good points, but one that really stood out to me personally because of a message I've personally been shouting to the mountains since I become an architect is the idea of trying to bring more people into the world of architecture and design. You know, it's a sad reality. A lot of people just don't know what architects do. They don't know what the value they bring. And so, and this is actually a direct quote. You mentioned the idea of allowing people to see the experimentation, not the final design, but the failures, the prototypes, the 10,000 versions of something. And then at first, it seems like that would almost devalue what an architect does, but you make a point that it does the opposite. It shows what architects go through, what they do. And so it's not diminishing what architects do. It's actually, you know, sharing knowledge with the outside world, what it is we do. And so I don't have the most defined question, but I would love if you could talk us a little bit more of the idea of, you know, the curator as translator, I believe you call it, the idea of, you know, showing the outside world what it is architects do.
Yeah, I think this is a thread that really goes through all of the interviews, particularly in the book, and also through the chapters themselves. And it is through that idea of reflecting on practice more generally. So this idea that architectural design is a practice, and in that word itself, practice means that there's going to be failures because every situation is approached in a new way. And so I think that's a really fundamental message and really important to think about. And I think through the case studies, you can see how that's been really, I guess, experimented with for a long time, whether it's something like the Herzog and de Meuron exhibition at the CCA, which was now some time ago, but that kind of almost idea of emptying the archive of Herzog and de Meuron and thinking about this almost as a kind of archaeology project that reveals how architects approach something, to things that are a little bit more explicit. And it goes back again to that idea of experimentation, risk, and failure. So one of the projects in the book that is a case study is one that I worked on and co-curated with Alex Newson from the Design Museum and Kate Rhodes, my colleague at Design Hub. And that project was called The Future is Here. And in that process, there was a huge risk in the way that we approached that exhibition. We commissioned then quite emerging architect called Roland Snooks, who was working in robotic manufacturing, and we commissioned him to actually treat the exhibition space as a live one-to-one test. And in that process, there was, as I said, a great risk of failure, that this was his first kind of built project. It was really getting things out of the computer and actually into the exhibition environment in terms of, you know, how could these ideas, radical ideas, be tested and scaled, and then what was the kind of future for that, and how could people actually experience this, that relationship between the human architect with the robot, and what were the kind of potentials for that. So that's just kind of one example, and we really thought about that very carefully as curators. We kind of set ourselves the task of, if this fails, this kind of experimental prototype, does that really matter? Because the really the intention is to show that this kind of research is kind of happening within the context of academia, but is very linked to industry, but also community and on how we approach things as a public. So we did a lot of documentation. We recorded lots of kind of interviews through the process. There was a series of them, actually, not just Roland's, but 10 other works as well. And in the end, we were able to produce that prototype, but it really didn't matter. The point was, we were trying to expose the process. And there were a number of ways to kind of come at that work through the exhibition, both through kind of lab-like, you know, engagements where you could see the robot, or you could bring in a file and test it through the 3D printer, as well as lots of discursive elements, students doing workshop where the public could get involved. And I feel like that was a really good example of how you kind of take on something quite risky, even with an international museum like the Design Museum, who I have to say were supportive but a bit anxious at the same time. And we all came around that idea together, and it was a truly collaborative process. And there's many other examples of that in the book. And I think it is, people really respond to that. That's my experience, is that, you know, in many ways, like, people enjoy seeing a building in the way that they wouldn't normally, the back of the house of a theatre or a fly tower. They also really want to understand the kind of challenges and grappling with the practice of architecture, and that, you know, I think we all agree that at the moment it's need to really take the foreground in terms of saying we can contribute to our communities from a whole number of different perspectives. The practice of architecture and design is expanding rapidly, and we're practicing in different ways than we were, you know, even a decade ago. So we are moving with society, and we have relevance here, and we have agency and leadership qualities and a way of thinking about the world that is valuable. And that's, I think, really important.
And so you mentioned the idea. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. So one thing, of course, the reason I'm stumbling is the whole book is about, you know, what is the new curator? But one point I'd love to hear you talk more about is kind of this more democratic approach to displaying work. And, you know, I'll take this from the book. you mentioned that, you know, the Museum of Modern Art and some older museums were very successful in displaying architecture to the public. However, if, and correct me if I'm misunderstanding, you know, the case is made that they did so with kind of a authoritative, I'm going to have to cut that part out too. they had a voice of authority that was kind of dictating what counts as good design. Whereas if I'm understanding it, you're saying the new curator doesn't present one singular correct answer, but instead shows the whole spectrum. Would that be correct in what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, again, that really is just a reflection of the, you know, times that we live in. Things are not, things are complex and they're plural. And there's lots of different ways of coming at a problem. There's lots of kind of different ways of viewing the world and making sense of the world. So, you know, some of those earlier projects were very successful. I think, you know, obviously it's spoken about in the book in various ways, but if we take the good designs, you know, MoMA, that kind of thing. But then if you want to take MoMA for an example, you have practitioners such as Paola Antonelli, who's such an important part of this book, one of the conversations, but also a great mentor to, I think, so many of the curators gathered in this book. And, you know, she to this day at MoMA is always thinking about that porosity of design practice. And you can see, I think, in her conversation and also in one of the case studies in the book or mentions in the book around the Design and Violence exhibition at MoMA, which, you know, was really difficult territory for that institution to tackle. Paola approached that from, you know, what I think is characteristic of a lot of the curators in the book, and also my own practice is sometimes you have to kind of come at things from different angles. You know, sometimes you have to be a bit stealthy in terms of how you approach things that don't have that kind of big ticket spectacle around them. And again, I'm not trying to set binary with that, because I, you know, sometimes those big spectacle Instagram friendly kind of exhibitions can be really important in terms of bringing people along for the ride. I argue, though, that the danger is if we only measure the value of exhibitions in this case, whatever form they might take, in how many, you know, how they fare on social media, how many people come through the door with ticket sales, then we're kind of missing something. We need that, and it's a bit concerning. I think we absolutely need that diversity of cultural production in terms of how we understand the making of architecture and design, and it's really important that that ecosystem is really strong. And certainly it's challenging. We see this in Australia at the moment, particularly through the experience of the pandemic, that a lot of the more independent or not-for-profit organisations are really struggling. The educational institutions have been really hung out to dry by our federal government, and so therefore their commitment to culture and exhibition making has been a bit stripped, or very stripped through lack of budget and means. And all of those spaces and ways of exhibiting are hugely important, so that that kind of complexity comes around it. And just quickly going back to that example of Paola Antonelli and Design and Violence, you know, what's so interesting about that story is that the exhibition didn't get up at MoMA. Paola managed to still, in collaboration with her co-curator, actually still make that project happen, in this case online. And then in the end, it actually became a book and a physical exhibition, because it was so engaged with and timely for its moment. And I think we see that complexity playing out with those kind of practitioners.
I thank you very much. I agree with all of it. So, of course, we've only touched on a few of the specialist roles of the curator, and there's quite a bit more. But I was wondering, you know, while we wrap this up, you know, so now that the book's been released, what's next on the horizon? What project are you spending your time on now?
Well, I'm working on kind of two really fantastic projects at the moment. And in terms of thinking about books, I'm working on a monograph series with Thames and Hudson, which is really kind of a deep dive into not emerging, but let's say middle career practitioners. And the monograph is obviously a really difficult thing to get across the line now. So we're really, again, looking at this expanding mode of architectural practice through a deep dive into individual practices. And certainly the first one's been released on Kirsten Thompson, who's an incredible architect here in Melbourne. The next one is Neeson, Merkett and Neil, based in Sydney. And then the third one will be March Studio, which is a multidisciplinary practice, again, here in Melbourne. And then on the other hand, I'm also working on a project for Open House Melbourne, which we do annually here, and which has grown kind of exponentially over the past decade or so. And this project is with a really fantastic curator, originally from the States, actually, but now in Melbourne, Tara McDowell. We're co-curating this project, which kind of relates a bit to the book. So for Open House, which of course, as you all your listeners will know, is about opening up the city and really celebrating architecture and the built environment. In this case, we've commissioned 8 cross-disciplinary practitioners to produce a very temporal work, creative work, only for the life of the weekend in 8 different sites around the city. And I guess this folds into this idea of contemporary curatorial practice and the new curator kind of using the city itself as a gallery, but also thinking about a very light mode of exhibition practice that's very sustainable as this kind of temporal quality, but also, you know, trying to think about the fact that what are the kind of more haptic experiences of space in the context of something like Open House. So how do we think about the prehistories of buildings, the bodies moving through space, the afterlife of particular spaces? So these 8 practitioners are working in particular sites to produce these creative works, which kind of challenge people perhaps to think a little bit more deeply beyond pure celebration. So it does kind of fold into what we've been talking about, that kind of agency. Did you bring people along? Absolutely, and make it welcoming and really that they're part of the process, but also tackle some thornier topics in the mix and actually start to think about how we all have a kind of responsibility to shape a better built and natural environment for everyone. And that's really at the heart of it.
Sounds great. Maybe we'll talk again in the future.
That would be fantastic.
Well, so I want to thank you very much for being here with me today and talking about the book.
Well, it's been a really great conversation. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Glad to hear it. And for everybody listening, the book is The New Curator, Exhibiting Architecture and Design. Thank you very much for listening and have a great day.